Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, welcome to this bonus episode of Pulp Kitchen. If you're joining us, perhaps you've watched or listened to episode 123 from this week, 123, where we talked about Ripley, the new series on Netflix, and also Civil War, Alex Garland's new movie. Today, we're going to be talking about The First Omen, but first, we're going to be talking about Scoop, the new Netflix film about the infamous Prince Andrew interview. Can I just say something, by the way? A pet peeve of mine, I've noticed in modern life, people often use the word infamous incorrectly.
But it's not infamous.
They'll just be like, this was infamously used by Vincent van Gogh. I'm like, what's infamous? You mean famous?
Just famous.
Infamously used by Hitler.
Yeah.
Famously used by Vincent van Gogh. But you know what I'm saying? Like, people are just like,
paintbrushes, famously used by Van Gogh.
Yes, yes. Vincent van Gogh, famously took off his ear. Even Vincent van Gogh infamously cut off his ear. I'm like, that's not even that infamous.
Mine is overusing the word literally when it isn't literal.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that all the
it's
time.
It's just a way to exclaim. It's literally the thing with thing. Yeah. And I'm like, it's not.
Literally. That's very school teacher-y of you. Stop saying like as well.
Yeah.
Like what? Although one time I got corrected on it at school, and I've thought about this for years, and I was like, I was correct to use like it. Sorry. He asked us what this type of fruit was, and I said, is it like a berry? And he went, the thing is about people your age is you're all saying like, is it like this? But I was like, I was asking, oh, there, I just did it. Sorry, I just did it. But I was saying, is it like a berry? As in, I know it is not a berry, but it is similar to a berry. Is it alike to a berry?
Write him a letter.
Probably dead.
Cut out different letters from different magazines.
I'm still thinking
from a
about
foreigner student. Yeah.
What's your favorite type of simile?
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, Scoop. Let's do Scoop first.
Scoop.
So, as the world will know, back in 2019, there was a major news story.
Infamous.
Yeah. I suppose. Yeah, totally. Because someone. Yes, anyway. Back to it. Sorry. Let's start again.
Pause you there.
Scoop. So everyone will remember in 2019 when Prince Andrew delivered an interview with BBC Newsnight about his relationship and friendship with the disgraced and infamous financier Jeffrey Epstein about his knowledge of Epstein's activity, his inappropriate behavior as a sex trafficker, actually convicted sex offender, Jeffrey Epstein.
Long association.
Let's call a spade, convicted sex offender, Jeffrey Epstein. And this was all happening in late 2019. I'm trying to work it. The interview happened after Epstein had died. Is that correct? Yes.
Yes.
Yes, that's right. And it was all a flurry of activity. And Prince Andrew had this interview.
Long interview,
hour long.
Minutes, yeah, hour
it's,
long.
You know, and for international audiences, people should know that, like, you know, Newsnight is a huge bastion of the BBC. It's like 60 Minutes in the US. It's a huge thing. And it was famously a car crash interview that and resulted in Prince Andrew being stepped back from his royal duties and being stripped of his royal titles. And it was an incredible embarrassment for the royal family, for him, and just worldwide. That was also celebrated as a feat of journalism. It's one of those famous interviews like Frost Nixon. It's just going to go down in the history of that. And Emily Maitlis quite rightly got a lot of credit as the journalist conducting that interview. But there's more to that story, which is how did that interview even come to take place? Because a lot of the questions people asked when that interview happened was, why has he done this? Why has he exposed himself so fully, no pun intended, in 60 Minutes interview with the BBC? And this Scoop follows the story of Sam McAllister, based on her novel, her book about the story, not a novel, sorry, but her story about the interview called Scoops, how they pulled off the most major interview in history, which is she was a booker at the BBC, and
what makes the story significant, of course, is that, and I'm trying to explain this as well for international audiences in case a lot of it doesn't translate, but it's like, you know, the BBC, you've got two institutions in this story, two massive British institutions, which is on the one hand the BBC and the other hand the royal family. And this is at a time when the BBC is being squeezed, is being asked about its role, is being having to make cutbacks. It's fighting to justify
still,
it.
Still to this day.
And still to this day, even more. Which is because the BBC has been sort of bizarrely politicized. And actually, if anyone wants to hear a really interesting case about how the BBC operates and why it's become the political football it has, listen to the Rest is Entertainment episode where they Marina and Richard talk about the BBC in its current state. But anyway, back in 2019 when things were changing, Emily Maitlis, who at the time was the presenter of Newsnight, and Newsnight, along with things like Panorama, are the kind of cutting edge, hard news journalism, investigative journalism, and reporting element.
Difficult, challenging interviews, asking the hard questions. Yes.
So
famously made famous by Jeremy Paxman in his era of Newsnight, and then obviously moving on to... Yeah.
So Sam McAllister, working as a booker, is being tired of, you know, trotting out the same stories for the news when she...
Oh, so she doesn't know if she's about to lose her job. They've announced that they're going to make redundancies across the BBC right when this is happening.
But not she hasn't been told she's going to be made.
No, but she feels like she's on the verge of losing her job.
The spectre of redundancies hangs over everyone. Yeah. And she manages to, initially a completely different reason, bridge a piece of contact with the press secretary for Prince Andrew about a minor bit of, you know, business promotion that he's doing. And as the heat from the Epstein scandal unfolds and has knock-on effect on Prince Andrew, the palace and the BBC become closer and closer, and they're trying to lock down what we know will become the big interview. You also have Emily Maitlis, played by Gillian Anderson. You have the producer, played by Romola Garry, the head of Newsnight. You also have the actual producer of the show there, a man, I can't remember his name.
Rufus Sewell as Prince
Rufus
Andrew.
Rufus Sewell playing Prince Andrew.
Really lost into Andrew.
Complete prosthetics. You also have Connor Swindles as a kind of sort of prologue character, as this photographer, British photographer in New York.
Yeah, getting that tabloid journal
with the telephoto lens, trying to get the photos of Prince Andrew and Epstein together.
Keely Hawes, who plays his...
Keely Hawes, thank you, playing the press secretary to Prince Andrew. And that's the kind of state of play. And like I said, it is a significant moment in British history, which still feels very, very recent, even though it's 5 years ago now, when you had these two institutions coming together and you had a prince on air publicly humiliating himself, crashing his own car, and Scoop is the story of how... You know, if Scoop is... the interview was Prince Andrew driving his car off a cliff, this is the story of how they built the ramp for him to drive away, okay? That's the setup. Billy Piper plays Sam McAllister. You know, good solid cast.
I love Billy Piper. She's great.
Yeah, absolutely. James, have I missed anything out?
No, I think you've set up it very well. I'm sure most people know this interview and have watched it. But it's
an hour 45. It's on Netflix. I think a lot of people thought it was going to be a series.
I thought it was going to be a series. Yeah. And almost watching it, I'm like, structurally, you could imagine it have been like a sort of mini three-parter, but no, it's totally fine. It's sort of an hour-long film. Yeah, you know what's interesting is that since the Epstein scandal, there's been such a huge consumption and so many things produced, whether it was the extensive Netflix documentary on Jeffrey Epstein, other stories relating to that specific moment and people coming forward.
And some other famous names involved.
Oh my God, the list. Have you seen the list? Oh, it's good. It's so good. Stephen Hawking.
He's on the list. Say that
he's on the list.
Dead.
He's on the list.
I'm trying to cover us. You can say that because he's dead.
And he's on the list. Yeah.
I've
not said anything.
How do you know he's on the list?
The list is public. You can see it now.
Well, flight manifest.
Yeah.
Okay.
So many great people on it.
Okay.
It's brilliant.
I'm the lawyer part of my brain is panicking. I'm just trying to make sure we don't get...
It's all right. Both our partners are lawyers. We're covered. You can't afford to take us down. We are free legal. And I almost felt like I know everything about this story. And I think coming into this is the story of the story and how the story got told. And I feel like there was also a documentary on this story that had come out that I think I'd seen parts of, where Sam McAllister was a talking head and Emily Maitlis was talking about... The main revelation of this is not just the interview and the way which Andrew conducts himself in that interview, but the fact that, you know, his press secretary and Andrew himself really thought that they had a bloody great interview. And it was all very well, actually. I think we're having quite a good time.
The arrogant naivety.
And it really shows that the institution of the royal family through Andrew and his press secretary were just almost completely ineffectual, soft, out of touch. And that's where I think the strength lies, in just seeing how they allowed this to happen and the sense of urgency that they felt when they finished taking the cards and transporting what was clearly like a goldmine of an interview. What I liked about it, I think all the cast are great. I think they really deliver. As we said, Billy Piper, clearly having fun in that character. Mm. Gillian Anderson, just really strikingly accurate. Emily Maitlis. I listen. Did you not think so?
Not in her voice, no.
Oh, I thought it was really well done.
The voice does not sound like Emily Maitlis.
Oh, right, so I listened to The News Agents, which is Emily Maitlis' like spin-off podcast, and I thought, oh my God, really feels, okay, sounds like her. But as you said, Rufus Sewell really lost in there. I think what is like, probably what I'm lacking from it is more to the story than I kind of didn't already know. Mm. So I sort of came out of it being like, yeah, that's another nice dramatization of that story, and I got what I needed out of it. I wasn't that gripped, or wasn't that infatuated with it. It was entertaining. Something about Sam McAllister's character to me is a little bit cringy. So
the character,
the character. Like, she's,
we've seen her talk in person. She's really cool.
She's really cool, and I think she's definitely this. She's like a power producer who's now going to be well known for the rest of her life for this interview. But I almost felt like. I'm a TV booker, and I've got nails and rings.
Well, she's meant to be different. She's outside the,
And you don't like my methods may be unorthodox, but damn it, I get results. It was a little bit of a character like that. And I just, not because Billy Piper delivers it in that way, I just feel like the cliche of the character. Funnily enough, when I did work in TV, the talent bookers and the celebrity bookers, they are all dressed like that to the nines, like very stylized, nice bag, nice coat, very made up, very well done. But nice, not like overly taken by it, but a solid entertaining journey, especially if you've not been paying attention to the Prince Andrew stuff.
Yeah.
Love it. And you'll get to relive the highlights of the worst things he says.
Yeah, and that's the thing, I think it's kind of like fine, solid, but pretty unremarkable, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's like the TV movie highlight of the week. And then as we go forward, most people will forget it.
Bit come and go, bit sleepy.
Yeah, it's. I think they stretched it out, to be honest. Actually, some people said, oh, they thought it could be a series, but I'm like, I feel like they got me all I could. Yeah. They really, I mean, look, like Sam McAllister, I appreciate that they probably wanted to substantiate the fact that she was a single mom working at the time, couldn't have done this without the support of her mother.
Yeah.
It's women who mainly brought this story together on the press secretary side, on the producer side, Emily Maitlis. But I'm like, I don't need to know about her son's love life at school.
No.
That stuff, cut. Could be one sentence. I don't need to have several scenes devoted to that.
Yeah.
We're all here for the interview. So I think it was kind of a little bit unremarkable in that sense. I think that Gillian Anderson didn't sound like Emily Maitlis, but that's not a problem.
Because
she looked close enough to it. She doesn't have to, but also she sounded like a news broadcaster.
Yeah.
The bizarre thing I had is that I like Rufus Sewell, and I think he did a good job playing Prince Andrew. But at the beginning, in particular, I was like, you don't sound like Prince Andrew. And not only do you not sound like Prince Andrew, you don't actually sound like a prince. He actually spoke
a bit too rough.
Too gruff. He sounded like, at best, the general manager of your local John Lewis, right?
Mm.
Not an insult against John Lewis, don't get me wrong, but it's like, he did not sound like the son of the Queen.
Yeah.
Prince Andrew, especially in that interview, you hear him, he is posh and he is refined.
No,
it was a shooting party.
It was a shooting party.
A stunned shooting weekend. Rufus Sewell plays him a little bit too gruff, I think, which is strange. But on the whole, other than that, Rufus Sewell is very good in it. And the prosthetics are very...
not that they should, but they do not do kind to Prince Andrew. Like, there's a scene where he's interacting with someone who cleans his room and arranges his cuddly toys on his bed. And I mean, it's over for that.
I mean, literally, there's a bit where you catch him literally with his trousers down.
When's that?
Out of the bath.
Oh, God, yeah. I forgot about that.
I think, so the stuff building up to the interview, I think the whole film, this is the strength and weakness of the film, is that the whole thing, I think, is saved by having the interview included, because we're all waiting for that. But the problem is, obviously, a lot of us have already seen that.
You've seen the clips
over and
over.
It's a slight rehash, re-highlight. But what is great is that when they do play it out, and being given the hour of context you've had beforehand, and knowing that you've got other people in the room watching the monitors, I watched it with Anna and my friend Louis, and we all know that interview very well, but when it did get to that interview, we were watching it through our hands and squirming, because it is unbelievably uncomfortable and funny how often he just steps into bear traps.
And when he's speaking, you feel like he's really outmastering the questions, and like he's got the perfect answer that's irrefutable evidence.
He didn't get it.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's the arrogant naivety and the way that Maitlis and her team together, it's a whole team effort, skillfully gave him enough space to, you know, that old phrase, give them a man, you know, give them enough rope to hang themselves. And they did. And, you know, I just, that was the most entertaining part, seeing the rehash.
There's like questions where she asked him about, I mean, it's kind of just reviewing the original interview now, but questions when she asked him, it's after he had been convicted as a sex offender, he then went to go and stay in his residence in New York. It's like, did you not think as a member of the royal family, it would be slightly inappropriate at that time to stay with him? And he just didn't understand that whole bridge and
well, you know, he offered me a shooting weekend.
But also,
that wasn't me because I don't sweat because I had a condition, and it's just unbearable.
To this day, I feel like every summer almost for the rest of time, there is going to be that clip cut. When every time we have a heat wave in the UK, it'll be that clip. Cut to the weather being told it's 35 degrees and then the Curb Your Enthusiasm music playing because you know he's just going to be sweating.
Anyway, I mean, so I that's the thing.
We're kind of just reviewing the original.
We are. This is the thing is that when we came in today, we probably were thinking of originally reviewing this in our main episode this week, but we don't. What we found with the film is solid and interesting as it is, it's not actually that remarkable. We don't actually have that much to say about it. It doesn't give you as much as it should have been. It's playing the highlights.
Yeah. It's almost a greater story behind, especially since 2019, like the way in which media and TV has become drastically defunded. And it, obviously what's sort of, well, not out of their control, but what's harder to reckon with is the shift of attention and eyes to the internet, which has meant, you know, I think it's 89% of people in TV recently are not working, and I'm talking like daytime TV, not daytime TV, like terrestrial TV, not drama. There's a huge unemployment rate there now. Loads of my peers who used to work in TV are either not working or have shifted into commercial branded content. So you take that and you go, well, it's clearly really important that we have resources like the BBC and just news in general to get the stories that need to be told. And without that, it will not happen. I think that's probably like a better angle that is more interesting to me about where the landscape is changing.
There's a bit towards the end, which I found quite funny because, you know, the revelations coming out and it's being, you know, Prince Andrew's having his title stripped and everything. And Billy Piper's walking through Leicester Square and everyone's got their phone out and they're filming the news footage on the big screen. And I was like, no one would film that on their phone.
No.
That's not something people film on their phone. No. That's not interesting to
it's already captured. Public.
It's that no one gets their phone and goes, oh, look, I'm going to take a video of Prince Andrew's news headline. Yeah. I was like, that's such a movie moment, TV movie. It's actually... It's a pretty good, solid TV movie because it comes out on Netflix. There's no distinction between that and the rest. So.
Yeah, it's kind of juicy. It's a little bit gossipy if you're into that. But check it out. It's not bad.
Scoop. Scoop.
George the First Omen.
Not the last.
Not the last. I've been calling it the Last Omen in my head for a while, but it's definitely the first.
Yes.
Prequel to the original Omen from 1970, I think it's
Seven.
Huge film for that time. I think it might have been the highest grossing film of that year, but don't quote me on it.
Kind of post-Exorcist horror boom.
100%. Yeah, the creepy church horror spawned two sequels, which I haven't seen, and then a 2006 remake, which is very much a shot-for-shot remake, which came out on the 6th of the 6th of 2006. So The Omen is... Have you not seen any Omens?
Not seen any Omens.
Yeah, I remember watching the first original Omen when I was young, far too young, and like not being that scared by it. And then I watched the 2006 one and it kind of never really impacted me. This is very similar structurally in the opening to Immaculate. An American woman comes to Italy to make her vows and join a nunnery. It's Immaculate. And stuff goes wrong. It's very creepy. That's... Immaculate,
but just been slightly beaten to the punch.
Yeah. So prequel to Omens. This is set years before.
Question. Yes. So when you say it's a prequel, are they keeping it in the same universe?
This is in the same universe as Omen 1977 or 6, whenever it was. So Margaret, played by Nell Tigerfree, meets up with Bill. You've got Bill Nighy in this.
Right, sure.
Being nice and creepy. You've got Ralph Ineson, who I send the main app. A wonderfully gravelly, tortured voice. He does lots of exposition in this, talking about God and the thing and blah, blah. And Charles Dance in the scene.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, great Charles Dance. Anyway, sorry. Margaret comes to Rome in the 1970s and goes to join a nunnery. She's greeted by Bill Nighy, who's a long friend of hers. And there's this huge little political unrest in Rome because they've got workers protesting for working rights, a pay and conditions. But similarly, this protest has become, for young people, a larger conversation about anti-establishment, the money that's allocated towards the church and this. And there's this huge sense that the modern young children, young people are becoming disaffected with the church. People are not looking to religion to solve their problems. Everything is sort of shifting away from God. And there's this hope that, you know, Margaret, who's very young, who's going to join this nunnery, can maybe help bridge this gap, bring a new lease of life to the religion, huh. And sort of, you know, think. I always lose my way with religion. I'm like, you know, because that's important for
people.
Them. She joins a nunnery, which is only for women and young girls. Adorable little Italian girls singing and dancing in the thing. All of that.
But little did they know, little, it was going to be.
It was an omen. So one of the girls that is, there's girls of all ages from very young to much older till 18. And it's a kind of place where if women for whatever reason are going to have a child, they can come to the nunnery and they can be pregnant and have that child in a safe space for women. So Margaret is teaching and learning Italian with the girls and it's all very happy and she's connecting with God. What, there is one girl who is locked away in a room and is not allowed to interact with the other. Well, not locked away, she's held in a room and is only allowed up very selectively because she's had problems where she's bitten other children and been very violent. Her name is Carlita. And there seems to be a problem with Carlita. And also, Margaret is also... haunted.
How do you solve a problem like Carlita?
Literally.
Sorry. Because they're at another
Totally. And she sort of takes a likening to Carlita and is like, why is she being locked away? Clearly, like, if you put someone in a prison, they become a prisoner, that kind of logic. Mm. But very creepy things start happening. So here's the thing with the First Omen. My friend, Horror Amy, who I see a lot of horror with, we see lots of horror films together. And she'd heard that this was all right, quite gory, pretty punchy. And my main thing is that this is a scary film. This is much scarier than the other horror that I've seen recently relating to Immaculate and the First Omen.
Okay.
This is
and the Late Night with the Devil is scarier than that.
Yeah, scarier with Late Night with the Devil. I think Late Night with the Devil is a better film, but I was surprised by how scary I was. We both have watched a lot of horror. She literally works in the horror and we were both sitting, I'm so pleased to say, for I think two or three moments in this film, sitting on our seats, I was watching through my hands and it made me jump out of my chair with genuine fear, which is really great to see. And it's got that, there's one scene, there's many scenes, but there's one in particular which had that really great feeling of that horror of when you're like a sleep paralysis where I can, this thing's being played out in front of me, it's coming towards me, I can't move, I'm stuck. Ooh. I know it's going to be terrifying and then it is and it's great. And for the first half of this film, I was like, God, these guys really are understanding how to do great horror. I'm so relieved that this is scary and it's impactful. Like that really, really good jump scares. I should say it's directed by Arkasha Stevenson. And then we've got this other element which has to become very plotty because what it does in the second half is it has to prequel The Omen. And I sort of found myself having a great time with it. And every time there was a scare, I was really entertained and really scared. And I got, oh, this is really good fun. I want to see what they can keep going and where they can take it. And it's more that the second half becomes very plotty and bogged down with setting up the whole process of we need to, someone above. So I should explain the premise of The Omen really for people who don't know. The Omen is the Antichrist, the son of the devil. It's this idea that at once in the original film, this man's child was swapped at birth to the son of a jackal and the devil. And this child bears the marker 666 on the back of its skull and it will bring upon the wrath of the world and he will do the devil's bidding, which is, you know, important for people who care about that kind of thing. And so the child is like cursed and people sacrifice themselves on behalf of this child. There's almost like a Final Destination element to it where like bad things happen around the omen. There are various demons expressed as people that will do the devil's bidding. And so this is about the church is losing its faith in the ability for people to be drawn to it for religious reasons. There is a twisted version of the church that thinks if we can create a demon, an omen, a bad relic that forces people to remember that they need to fear God, this will bring people back to the church. So there's like a bad sect of the religion. So they are sort of, you get the idea that they are using the devil to artificially inseminate women to create this first version of an Antichrist that can be born. There was a particular image in this that I thought was, this wasn't the scariest scene, but it was an image of sort of like something coming from within, very immaculate, something coming from within that shouldn't be. And it looks right down the eye of the storm and you see something coming out. Well, that's my door.
You see something.
And you see something coming from a woman and it was just burnt into my retinas. Brilliant. So as we move on to the second half of the film, unfortunately, I felt like we had to shovel in so much exposition to get right at the very end to the First Omen. And while it was nightmarish and horrible. I was less interested. I actually thought, can we sack off the Omen stuff? I'd quite like you guys to just keep scaring me in a creepy...
Why can't they have it as a standalone? Or just like, surely I thought, because also if this film was a success, haven't they just painted themselves into a corner where the next film can't be the next film because the next film is the original Omen?
Well, that's the thing. They had a sort of finale which sets up Omen and I was sort of less interested in it. And then I think they had a scene which I think sets up a sequel to the prequel, which just didn't interest me.
Right.
I would have actually just quite... you're doing cliche, creepy nun goes to Rome for creepy religious stuff. You're already doing that cliche, you got creepy young girls. Just do a scary film. You've done really good scares. Would have happily had that. Just got a bit plotty.
Also, The Omen, although a known horror title, is not... No one's walking around with a deep connection to that film that came out nearly 50 years ago.
Totally. So at the end, there's a lot of... They bring up sort of the actors' faces and the things, and I'm like, yes, I remember that.
Gregory Peck was in it.
Literally, they've got Gregory Peck's photograph because a baby will be, taken to this. And I almost forgot that it was an Omen film. Because it was scary enough in its own right.
Yeah, they didn't need to do it. No one cares about the Omen that much.
I wish when they were making it, they thought, this is really good. Let's sack off the Omen stuff. Just call it...
They could have just called it the first Omen. Couldn't they?
What do you mean?
I mean, maybe I haven't seen
Could have not called it.
No, they still could have called it that, couldn't they?
Yeah, you could. You could have taken the concept.
Yeah.
But it just got slightly lopsided towards the end.
Yeah.
But one of the scariest horror films I've seen in a long time in cinema.
Okay,
so
great.
If you're looking for a good scare, there's definitely something to be found.
Right, that's what I was going to ask. Of the three that we've just talked about the past few weeks, that and Immaculate Late Night with
Please
the Devil.
Check out my
Because I have a spooky group as well. I have some spooky friends. I'm thinking, like, would that be the first one I should go to then?
I think if you're looking to really sit there and be scared in the cinema, I would say you're best preserving that horror experience in the cinema with the first Omen.
Okay.
And then I think the other two are not as scary. You know what? Funnily enough, I was really taken aback by how violent and gory Immaculate was. But actually having seen this, it almost makes Immaculate look a bit soft.
Oh, wow.
But funnily enough, this is a 15, Immaculate was an 18. So I've got no idea, having seen two films very recently, what makes one an 18 and the other a 15?
Is it to do with like sexual violence and to do with like...
There's that in here. There's a scene when... I'm not going to tell you, but it's quite horrifying. If you are triggered by like the image of the devil... like reaping havoc on people. It's really, really out there and bloody and gory. And just one shot in particular just totally burnt itself into my eyes. But both of us came out of it going solid. We were both genuinely scared in that cinema, jumping out of our seats, which is really fun to get that. When I think if you're watching too much horror, you become a little bit too oversensitized to the horror moves that it's taking. But I was very impressed with its scare factor. Could have sacked off all the Omen stuff.
That was the first Omen there that James reviewed. If you've seen the first Omen and want to let us know your thoughts on it at hello@popkitchenpodcast.com. We'd love to hear it. Those are our two little bonus reviews this week, Scoop and the first Omen. Again, if you haven't listened to the main show this week, episode 123, we reviewed Civil War and Ripley, the new TV series.
Ripley's great, by the way.
Ripley's great. Look forward to hearing your thoughts on all of this. And as ever, guys, just have a good week.
Have a good
Look
week.
Look after yourself.
Have a good weekend.
We're getting through the year now.
New episodes of Pop Kitchen every Wednesday.
Exactly. Enjoy the springtime.
Oh, it's spring.
Enjoy the back. Extra light.
Fantastic.
What a great thing. Get out there, but also go to the cinema and see things as well.
Yeah. Lots of fun films coming out soon. Stay tuned. See you next week.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye.